podcast, Greater Than Yourself, Season 5. Let's go, girls. Come on.
Welcome to a podcast Greater Than Yourself. I didn't know if I was going to start first or you or Sylvia, but I'm Mrs. Jones.
And I'm Sylvia.
And we are going to drive this podcast off a cliff like Thelma and Louise.
Let's go. We are joined today by AA Mythbuster, a.k.a. Busty, and Jane.
You don't have to do all
thank
the
you guys. I mean, you have many.
It's like 47.
So many aliases.
And
thank
Jane.
You guys for being here.
And me.
Bye.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We're going to talk about women.
We so women folk
stupid
have
yes.
gathered here today. No, I mean, the whole premise of today's episode is really just to talk about topics that are like specific to women in AA, you know, and our different experiences and how shit can get kind of weird. So hopefully some of you out there feel validated. Nope, it's not just you. Shit is weird. So we're here to talk about it.
Awesome. Awesome. So, yeah. And that in itself, I think, is cool. And yet, like, alcoholism isn't different depending upon gender. However, we have certain situations and experiences that we can talk about as women that will be different than other experiences, you know, and we all know, like, it sounds ironic, but like the things that kind of come up in a women's meeting may or may not have anything to do with alcoholism.
Yeah, apparently some of us here have never been to a women's meeting where people are talking about their periods. You guys don't go to many women's meetings.
I don't think I've ever been to a women's meeting.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I mean, this is my first women's meeting. What's happening
oh,
right now?
Oh,
welcome.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Make us your home group.
We
like and subscribe to my channel.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, Busty, yeah. Tits, McGee, do you have a topic or a reading?
Well, I just was thinking before while you guys were talking about like women's meetings and stuff like that and how, I mean, I do have a topic, but I think one, like how my experience has changed. Like I was thinking about in preparation for this podcast, like how I used to go to like my home group was a women's meeting there. We have this like retreat that's here locally. That's like a big like recovery women's retreat. And how much like on one side of it, like I felt so loved and welcomed by the women. Like, I don't know if that's, you know, have your guys' experience too, but like, very much like, let us love you until you can love yourself. And like, you know, they're like this huge support and stuff. And how, it's different now. Like I think about like, if I went to the women's meeting I used to go to, how probably weird I would feel. Cause it can very much be, I think it goes sometimes in the way of like, let's read from this weird meditation book or, you know, whatever, but that has nothing to do with my topic. What I was thinking about was like, do you guys have anything to say about that before I do say my topic? No.
Oh man. I was just thinking of a women's meeting I went to recently where I got a very passive aggressive, no, very polite kiss off from somebody for talking about fear inventory. She's like, well, I did a women's way through steps and I just ain't never heard of that before. Can you show me the book where it talks about doing that? And I like brought her to the part with the fear inventory. I was like, yeah, here. And I thought I'd made a friend. And then after she walked off, I was like, wait, I think she was trying to one up me there. Oh, well.
Oh,
yeah. Generally, I think women's meetings can be very like huggy sober, which I liked as a new person. It didn't get me sober, but it made me feel good briefly for an hour twice a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Although there's a women's meeting that I attended in early recovery, and it seemed to run kind of hot or cold. Mm-hmm. You know, either you were getting a lot of hugs and attention or none at all. You know, it felt very confusing to me. I'm sure it was on me, you know, seeking validation or seeking attention and perhaps behaving differently, you know, in a mixed meeting versus a women's meeting.
Yeah. I remember just one more thing, that this one time when I was like in the middle of relapsing and coming back and stuff, I would go to this women's meeting, and it was my mom's birthday, and I was leaving Giant Eagle, and I stole a potted flower from Giant Eagle, and like I had the money, I could have bought it, and I just stole it, and I was like, I have to go tell the women at the women's meeting, you know. And I went and told them, and they're like, we'll go back to Giant Eagle with you and you can turn yourself in. And I was like, no, I'm good. I'm not going to do that. But like that, you know, it was like, nice.
That's kind of lovely. Like, I mean,
you're
supporting
like, that's not
you.
Why and, I told you this.
Yeah, 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 I want to be absolved.
I just want to feel better. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Committee. Love it.
Has anyone here read the book A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps?
I have not.
Mm-mm. So we can all safely shit on it without.
No, is that the workbook?
There's a workbook and a book.
I've not read the book, but I did at one point at my sponsor's advice get the workbook. I didn't like go through and utilize all of it, but it was interesting. Just like a, you know, just different. I didn't need it. Turns out.
Yeah. So, Busta, what's your topic?
I feel like my topic is kind of heavy to start with, but it relates not even so much to like, you know, only women, but you know, I went through the steps in one way when I was first getting sober, and it was with a sponsor who was kind of like harsh and like 12 and 12 and big book. She did what she knew what to do. But I remember that I had like certain things in my fourth step that were, is this too heavy to start with? Does someone else want to start?
No, okay. I'm all in.
We can
now.
Take it. We can take it.
Okay. So, you know, that it was like, okay, I've been through these assaults, like rape. I was molested as a child and things like that. And like, okay, now I'm going to do the fourth step. And I'm going to go through this process of like looking at the fourth column of like selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. And like, I wasn't taken through that way with this person. So basically when I did my fifth step and I got to like the fourth column stuff around those events, her understanding of that was, if you weren't drunk and high, those things wouldn't happen to you. So, and I fully understand that, like, and she was like, that was my understanding for myself, 'cause she had things happen to her too. So it was like, okay, that's my, and I remember in the moment feeling sad and sorry for her that she believed that to be true. Because that answer and that solution brought me no peace. You know what I mean? Like, I felt no peace from that. Well, it's your fault, you know, and looking at a fourth column, in a way of like, okay, what did I do because of this resentment? Well, it happened, and you know, I hurt people. I was promiscuous more because I thought that that was okay, you know? And that's like very, baseline, like what I got from that. And then to look at like, okay, like moving forward, like how can I behave and how can I help other women? 'Cause it's like, you're not going to sponsor somebody who hasn't experienced those things. You know what I mean? And like, how can we look at the fourth column, not to put blame on them or, you know, to, I mean, I remember people's reaction to me saying that I was raped was like, it was fucked, but it was like, they weren't given the tools. So I was able to look at different things in a fourth column of like these people did the best that they could. I hurt people because of this and that wasn't okay. I didn't, you know, I anesthetized, whatever. And then I can help other people through a fourth column around those things so that they can have peace, you know what I mean, to some degree.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
I love that. I think it's really helpful to talk about that when you're giving someone instructions for the steps and talking about the fourth column, because they may not have a question right now, but you know, they're going to wonder when they get to that part. And many of us have experienced trauma like that, and nowhere in the book does it say like you did something to set the ball rolling. You brought that on yourself. Like, that's not your mistake. And so, Busty, I love that you said, how did I behave after that? You know, did I clam up? Did I feel, did I seek revenge? Did I feel entitled to treat other people poorly because of what had happened to me? You know, and that can take you down any number of paths. So, like I said, I think it's really helpful to lead with that so that there is peace. That weight is lifted, right? You're not going to go through this process and hear that this was your fault, that this happened to you.
Yeah, that's so, man, it's so beautiful. It's so important. Actually, just earlier today, I got to hear a fifth step, and that was part of it, you know, and this person, you know, kind of had the belief that column four was, you know, her mistakes were letting the person in her apartment, you know, it's a date rape. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, how sad is that, that we have a tendency to beat ourselves up or blame ourselves. And what I love about step four, it's unfortunate that it doesn't specifically address trauma, although we've all been through the book in a way where we can, you know, apply our traumatic experiences to it and still look at our mistakes in holding on to the resentment, just as Mithy was describing, without that self-pity. You know, it's a more practical view of, like, you know, I was a victim, but I played the victim afterwards. Mm-hmm. And here's how I did that, you know, and being able to see it that way and to address those mistakes is like the most freeing gift ever. It's astounding. I never got that from therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. I was told, you know, I read a lot of anti-AA stuff before I came to AA. And one of the criticisms was, you're going to be told in like step four to take responsibility for all the fucked up shit that people have done to you, which, and then it was like, specifically, this is bad advice for women. And I did not find that to be true. And in fact, you know, the book kind of touches on trauma, right? At the bottom of 66, where it says, we realize that the people who wronged us were spiritually sick. Mm-hmm. And I saw that like my first time reading through the book. I was like, oh, it's right there. It's just there's fucked up people in the world. And a freeing thing for me was realizing like the things that people have done to me doesn't really say anything about the person that I really am. It says mm-hmm. something about the person they are. And then the personal responsibility that I have to take, I definitely saw in my fourth columns, like, oh, I got to a point where I was like, well, it doesn't matter how I treat other people, because if other people treat me however they want to, you know, and that was my mistake, was allowing myself to become like bitter and cynical and then, you know, harming other people. Cause I was like, well, this is just how the world works, you know? And that's the thing that I take responsibility for.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great topic.
Super common too. I mean, I don't think anybody who's been sponsoring people for any length of time hasn't had this stuff come up.
Right. Yeah. Amongst men too.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us have sponsored men as we raise our hands on a podcast?
I have not.
Nodding. Ooh, this is a great topic. Are we going to jump into sponsoring men? Yeah, the last step I heard was a man. Yeah.
Very cool.
But yeah, how many of us do sponsor men?
I do. I do have one right now. Far more women. But yeah, I'm totally open to sponsoring men.
So I've always been open. Oh, go ahead, Bessie.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have like made myself available. I don't know like how specific I've been. I think I say like, you know, if anyone is looking for a sponsor or something like that, but no one has ever taken me up on that. So, but I would be open to it. I don't think there's really any difference. I think if you're like at an in-person meeting and you're getting a vibe or something that you, you know, trust your gut and you like hand them off to someone else who could also help them and take them through the steps. But, if there's no vibe, it's like, let's go.
Yeah.
Like a sex vibe.
Exactly. Like a sex vibe.
Short for vibrator.
Okay.
I got it. I understand how the kids speak nowadays.
Sorry, go ahead, A.
Like locally here, you know, I'm in a small town. So whenever I was first getting sober, there was one guy here who was recovered and had taken the steps out of the big book. And he came here from like Boston. And so there was a ton of sick people, like men, women, and he just started sponsoring women. You know what I mean? Like, cause he wanted to, like, there were women that were sick and suffering and they wanted to take the steps. So he was like, yeah, that's fine. And everybody was like, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, this ain't right. All the things. And he was just like, you know, they want to recover and whatever. So that's like kind of where I came from, was that idea. But like, I've only sponsored gay men, not for any reason. That's just like who have asked me and who I've taken through the steps. But I mean, it's like, we don't use our genitals to take the steps. So it's like, it's not a problem.
Oh my God, I've been doing it wrong this whole time. How embarrassing. Shame.
The safe space.
Yeah. I feel like I've talked about this on the podcast before, but like my original home group, there are a couple guys who just seem to sponsor everybody, men and women. And so it never occurred to me that it was a thing that men with men, women with women. I just never heard that. And so the first time I heard it in another group, I was like, what are you guys talking about? It's, you know, so I'm glad that like it was normalized for me very early on, that like it's not a big deal for a man to sponsor a woman or a woman to sponsor a man.
Yeah. What do you do if you're bisexual? Like, sorry, you can't be sponsored.
You're fucked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, pick a lane.
Just forget about it.
Yeah, I think another thought that came to mind that might like change. I think that a lot of people that I have talked to have become more open-minded in the last few years when there was like this necessity to move to Zoom, and even more open-minded to sponsoring across Zoom. And so that could look very different. If you're sponsoring someone on Zoom, you know, a man sponsoring a woman or vice versa, or like meeting in a coffee shop or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I think the men that I've sponsored have all been over Zoom. Like, and I guess it wasn't by design. I've had men approach me in real life and ask for sponsorship, but the one particular case I'm thinking about, I didn't think he was serious. Like, it was very much said in like a, I don't know. It just gave me a bad gut feeling. I was like, I don't think you're really looking for me to sponsor you. Like,
that's the vibe. It's the vibe.
Yeah.
I said something like, I know a lot of men who sponsor guys, and I'd be happy to get you in touch with one of them. And then he said, and this is where he like showed his hand. He's like, oh no, I'm very selective about who I will allow to sponsor me. And I was like, really?
Oh, ew. Yeah.
He was like twice my age. I was like, I think if you were serious about this, you wouldn't be asking a woman half your age.
Mm-hmm. See, and even if a woman were to say that to me, like, I'd be like, okay, ew, like, you don't, like, that's not what this is about. It can't be about any one person being the only person who can do, you know, like, that's ridiculous.
Well, if anybody said, you know, I've had people tell me, like, I'd love to work with you, but you don't have enough sobriety, whatever. If anybody, for any reason, is coming at you and saying, like, sorry, I'm really selective about, and I'm like, you're not dying, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go You're be selective ready. Then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Can you imagine drowning and being like, ew, that flimsy reed. I don't like it.
That one's not.
I'm gonna grab something else.
I only grab hot reeds. I just called myself hot. I'm sorry, guys.
Listeners, I know you guys can't see us, but Jane is very hot.
No, I'm not.
Super hot.
But I think what you were saying, Jane, kind of segues into another thing of like, I mean, like Sylvia, you know, you haven't been to a ton of in-person meetings, but I think like, which it doesn't matter, but I think that there is like predatory shit that goes on in meetings that like I've experienced firsthand from like unrecovered old timers, like getting a little too handsy and stuff. I don't know. Has anybody else experienced that? No? Okay.
I mean, the first meeting that I went to, y'all have heard me talk about how terrible this meeting was. There were a lot of women speaking to me afterwards. There was like a line of people to talk to me because I must have been the only unfamiliar face there. And there was a man standing in line for a significant amount of time to speak to me and give me his phone number. And that left me feeling very uncomfortable. That was like the cherry on top, though, of that meeting. And like you said, I don't really frequent in-person meetings. So I don't know that that would like be the norm, but I think that it's pretty typical, you know?
It happens. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think
I'm grateful I came in old and married. What? Sorry.
Old and married. Yeah. Mrs. Jones is also very beautiful, like for those of you listening. So anyway. It didn't happen as often as I was prepared for it to happen, though. Like, again, the anti-AA stuff that I'd read, like, there's one in particular that was geared towards women, and it was like, it prepared me for, like, I don't know, I was going to walk into an AA meeting and get tackled by, like, a group of, like, lusty football players who just love me. And it was not like that.
No, yeah.
I think, you know, the shitty behavior from men that I've gotten in meetings is, like, not worse than you get anywhere else. I think what I would tell women in that regard, like if I were going to broach the subject with a woman, I would just be like, yeah, it's just like everywhere else. You have to use your common sense, and like not everybody in a meeting is there to help you. But it's the same street smarts, you know, like the vibe, right?
Yeah.
It's not something that's unique to AA. Like you could meet a
recovery.
Right. Right.
I think it is more nauseating though, because everyone in that room should understand that a newcomer is there because they are sick and desperate and very vulnerable. Yeah. And so even when you see someone attempting to kind of like prey on that vulnerability, it's, you know, it really is difficult. And it sets off a reaction in me for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Nauseating is a good word for it, but it's to Jane's point, like, yeah, it's, I don't think that you're truly any more unsafe than you would be walking into a bar. But I'll say that, like, what a cool example of the fellowship coming together and the traditions working happened in my home group not too long ago, where we voted to ban somebody from both our in-person and online meetings because of predatory behavior. Mm-hmm. And it went through a process of approaching this individual, talking to them multiple times, and then, you know, putting it to a group vote, and our common welfare comes first. And that person is not banned from AA, but they're, you know, they can't let them be someone else, some other group's problem. You know, so we take it seriously. And when we notice it, like, we can address it.
That's amazing.
I have also seen that happen. And it was a proud moment for me seeing the group come together. And I think he just got a 90-day ban, because there was also a situation where he was like off his meds. So we were like,
90 days. So that you cut him a deal. He's on probation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to see some improvement in you.
Take your meds again, buddy.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen predatory behavior from women with men, you know, and that's disgusting as well. You know, we're not unique. Did you guys know that 13th stepping is in the Big Book?
Wait, what?
What?
Yeah. It's in one of the personal stories. It's one of the personal stories, but it's one of the pioneers. Mm. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. I can't. It's like the husband is like, and his wife got sober and something.
Yeah, It's Jimmy Burwell. It's page 230. Hold on. And it's the wording is so bad. Okay, so it's the vicious cycle, and here it is on page 230. In June 1945, with another member, I made my first and only 12-step call on a female alcoholic. And a year later, I married her. She has been sober all the way. Wait, this is the line. She has been sober all the way through. And for me, that has been good. Ew, dude.
Love it. That's perfect.
So glad that's good for you.
But you know what? She didn't make any changes until she's through her first year. So it's cool. Yeah,
I know. Why a year? Why? Ew. Yeah. But I'm sure they had a lovely, long and happy marriage together.
Oh, maybe.
He was really proud of himself writing that too.
I know. Right. Yeah. For me, it has been. Why do you even add that? But like, she has been sober all the way through. Are you trying to take credit for it, Jimmy? Like,
right. All the way through one year. I don't know.
But it's been good for him. That's cool.
Yeah. That's all that matters.
She's miserable.
But I think to point to the obvious thing is like, you know, when the book talks about, cause I know like when I was first going to meetings, people would say like, read the book until you find yourself, you know? And I mean, it's the whole freaking thing is me, but the paragraph about like potential women and, you know, gone beyond recall within a few years and like, and then this is particularly true of like, you know, young people. I'm botching it all up, but like, I remember when I read that and I was like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Cause it was like, that's me, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was reading, Marty Mann's story, which I think starts on page 200. I'm not going to read it here today. Cause I'm not sure I'd be able to get through it, but, one of the first women in AA, her story is so powerful about, her quick decline and what her drinking was like in the last year. And I just identified with it so much, you know, near even the same age and the words that she chose to describe like her drinking when she didn't want to be drinking. Right. And what every night was like. And, even when she got into treatment, she said she was trying to be cooperative and she was learning about herself and the way that she described her understanding of what happened to her, her inability to cope with life and everything. It's just so powerful. And I saw myself in that right away. And like you said, Busty, like the quick decline, I don't know. It sounds like I've got a couple things going for me, being a little bit younger when I got sober and also a woman, but, I've had a relationship with alcohol, you know, since I was like a preteen, but, I had experienced the phenomenon of craving several times, like throughout the years, but the progression, you know, once I hit a certain threshold, it was very quick in the later years.
I was just looking at, you're talking about the things that she understood had like led her to like get really bad in her drinking, right? Can I read this part? This might be the
part. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
As the treatment progressed, I began to get a picture of myself of the temperament that had caused me so much trouble. I'd been hypersensitive, shy, and idealistic. My inability to accept the harsh realities of life had resulted in a disillusioned cynic clothed in a protective armor against the world's misunderstanding. That armor had turned into prison walls, locking me in loneliness and fear. All I had left was an iron determination to live my own life in spite of the alien world. And here I was, an inwardly frightened, outwardly defiant woman who desperately needed a prop to keep going. Yeah, I feel that myself.
Yeah, that's deep. Yeah, she was an amazing writer and very, very relatable.
Wasn't she a journalist or something? Like she's a professional writer, wasn't she?
She wrote at least a book, if not more. I'm not up on all the Marty Mann history.
She was apparently the first woman that Bill successfully sponsored. Sometimes I think it's because it's like she was gay, so he couldn't 13-step her.
I think successfully sponsored is so funny. Does that mean that you get successfully sponsored? Like, I can be successfully sponsoring people that don't stay sober. You know?
True.
I think that term is used to mean like, oh, I was successful and I kept someone sober and got them through the 12 steps. But it's like, we've talked about this before. We're not keeping anybody sober.
Right. Right. But they're like, saw them all the way through, or they got all the way through and started helping others.
Yeah. But if my job is to just
in the book, so that's pretty successful. If you ask me.
If my job is to be willing and available as they are.
Right.
And you know, they ghost, they like fall off, they do whatever. And I'm there for the next person. Guess what? I'm a successful sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
You can't take this from me, Mrs. Jones.
I'm going to successfully sponsor you.
I wish you would.
That sounds like a threat, doesn't it?
I know.
With my vibe. Since, I was going to say, since we referenced it.
Yeah, I watched the shit out of that. I can't find it.
On page 33, last paragraph.
I mean, I read this book.
To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantity some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics. So are they potential alcoholics or potentially female? Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large numbers of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try to get them to see it. For any gender, I love that paragraph, but particularly the certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. You know, again, talking about the alcoholic mind, not just the body, not just the inability to control our drinking, but the inability to stop altogether. That was my experience. I just assumed that desire would be that secret ingredient. And once I wanted to stop, I would, obviously.
Right. And I think that denial is so powerful. You can trick yourself for a long time that, I wanted to stop drinking yesterday and today I changed my mind. Or, you know, I only wanted to have three and now I want more. It's just like the inability to stop didn't register for me until I was way beyond that point. And reach that desperation. You know, I was kind of new in the back of my problem. This is the back of my head. Like this is becoming kind of a problem and more frequent than I would like it to be. But like you said, I'll stop when I want to. And it was way too late.
Yep.
And I think that paragraph speaks to like, you know, the two symptoms of alcoholism, right? Because it's like, you know, when I got sober the first time I was 18, I was 20 the last time I got sober. And like, I was going to meetings with like 100-year-old men who were talking about, you know, I drank for 40 years, you know what I mean? And like how I felt like the first time I was here, I was like, I don't belong here. You know what I mean? I'm only 18. Like, this is crazy. But the bottom line is like when I was 18, I had the two symptoms of alcoholism. I couldn't stop when I wanted to. I couldn't control how much I drank when I did drink, you know? So that paragraph, I remember reading it the last time and was like, oh, I don't have to drink for 30 years to be an alcoholic. That doesn't mean that, you know what I mean? I don't have to do all that to have the two symptoms of alcoholism, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God.
I like, seriously, like, it's not about the quantity and it's not about how many years you've been drinking. You know, we don't use that, you know, those as parameters to, you know, help someone diagnose themselves.
Thank you for listening.
Do you have a question about sobriety, the 12 steps, sponsorship, or just want to contact someone from the podcast? Email us at podcastgreaterthanyourself@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Dr_Silkworth or a podcast greater than yourself. If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a rating on your podcast app and share the show with anyone who may benefit.
Yeah, so I found it really confusing as a new person, hearing like all the war stories, right? Like in speaker meetings, people would stand up and be like, oh yeah, I was drinking like a handle of vodka a day. Or they'd have these crazy stories like, I had the handle of Jim Beam in my car and I took a swig and the cops were chasing me. And then I just drank the rest of it down and like revved the motor. And I'm just sitting there thinking like, oh, I'm not an alcoholic. That's what alcoholism is. I'm not an alcoholic, right? I was really confused on that point. And you can get confused sitting in speaker meetings, hearing people talk about insane quantities. Like, I think there's somebody in our like little corner of AA who was drinking a handle of vodka a day for what? And I think he was in rough shape after like a couple of weeks, right? So that's like the first part of it. I kind of doubt whether some of those stories are true. But, yeah, it wasn't until I started sponsoring women and I started hearing them talk about like drinking the same amounts that I drank, the same way that I drank. And then the only difference between them and me was that they were out of detox for the third time. And then I was like, oh, wow, it really isn't about the quantities. And I'm like, yeah, commonly, women aren't drinking nearly as much as you hear about people, you know, bragging about in meetings.
True. Which is why, like, I think... you know, we describe in a general way because those measurements can, you know, someone can separate themselves out. You know, if we start talking like, I'll shy away from mentioning specifics that are really irrelevant. Like whether or not someone drinks in the morning or whether or not they face legal troubles or whether or not it was hard liquor versus beer or wine, health problems, all that stuff. Because some of us do, some of us don't.
Yeah. I even had this weird thing towards the end of my drinking where I couldn't drink as much as I used to. I was like, how am I getting this fucked up on just a bottle of wine? Like, that just used to be a bad hangover for me. And now it's like, destroying me for like days afterwards. What is going on? It's another reason, like, you don't always want to bring up quantities because you can get like a reverse tolerance towards the end. This is like not specific to women, but whatever. Like, but I don't know. That's a pet peeve of mine when people like brag about how much they drank in meetings. I'm like, first of all, you're lying.
Yeah. It's a weird flex.
Yeah. So how many of you bring up in step one, like quantities? Do you ever ask people how much they are drinking or like, is there ever a reason to bring that up in step one?
Oh, that's a great question. And no, I don't.
No.
I mean, I can even
like, tell me what brought you here. Like what was your, I hate to use the word bottom cause that's kind of lame, but I'm like, tell me about your bottom. Cause I just talked to someone last week who was like looking for a sponsor and we were talking and she was so happy. And like, she was like only a few days sober and she was like jacked up. And I was like really happy and excited. And I was like, tell me a little bit about like what brought you here. You know what I mean? Like, you're really like, you're on fire right now. What's up? You know,
you're too happy. Yeah.
Like, are you wearing a wire?
Right.
You're researching a book.
Yeah.
Like a woman.
I was like trying to bring her down too, you know. I'm just like, tell me like what was it like? What happened to you? What brought you here? You know? Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm too happy right now to be 2 days sober, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta be careful
about that. Yeah, that's a little suspect.
Because like definitely there's that sometimes I can almost like, we're not supposed to diagnose people, but you know how you kind of like qualify someone in your head before you go over the, you know? Sometimes I can qualify someone just on like the just like the miasma of alcoholic despair on them. Like, you sit down with them in a coffee shop and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, you need to be here, right? You don't say that, but you think it. But there's another way that people can express that kind of despair where it's almost like a manic defense, where they're like giggling. And I've definitely sat down. Women in particular will do this, where like, she's telling you like the worst rock bottom story you've ever heard in your life, and she's laughing through it. And that's like, I think that's more like a fear of showing vulnerability.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, definitely. I've talked to people who are like 3 days sober and they were like, yeah, I really got it this time. I feel great. I just went to a meeting. I feel amazing. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if you're there yet, but I don't know. Someone's demeanor doesn't always indicate what's really going on.
Yeah. Cause you're right. I just want them to be like crying and like, I need to crying. So I know, you know,
there's like, well, it's like, yeah, mean girl sponsorship. Like, wow, you're really powerless. Thank you. So you agree?
Right.
This is because you did this meme once where you were like, when you're going through step one and your sponsee starts crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's like a happy cat.
You're like, yes.
Smiling. So exciting. Yes. It is. It's exciting.
Sorry, Sylvie.
Yeah. No, Jane, I was just thinking while you were talking about like, you know, you said like bragging about like quantities of drinking, and you know, that might be, I have heard men do that, but I've never even sat down like in step one or throughout the process. I don't ask about how much they've been drinking, but I was sitting here wondering like, do I recall ever like someone trying to impress me with that by like offering that information or bragging about it? Or it could just be that they feel like they have to qualify the fact that they're here. Yeah. They have to justify why they're here. They have to prove to me, no, I really am an alcoholic, you know? And that has not been my experience. I, at least not that I can remember right now, a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Like I normally don't like put a whole lot of credence in the stories in the back, like there's stuff to cherry pick, whatever. But in one of them, there's something that the author is relating his experience about how at a meeting, everyone was going around and like sharing how much they drank. And the author was saying like, he didn't know. And someone was asking him like, well, how often did you go to the store and, you know, and buy another bottle? And that's how it hit him. Like, oh shit. Like that's how much I was drinking, you know? Mm-hmm. So it brought some clarity to him. Like I can kind of see some value in it, but I've never had it be part of like the process of like, you know, trying to qualify somebody or help them qualify themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think if somebody asked me directly, if they're like, I don't know if I'm drinking enough to be an alcoholic, I might talk them through that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think we really get a skewed sense in AA of how much is normal? Like, I really didn't think I was drinking, quote unquote, a lot compared to the other people in AA when I came in. But it was helpful to me to look up statistics on like, on average, how much are other women my age drinking? And then I was like, oh, I'm in the 80th percentile. Yeah. So I am actually statistically drinking a lot. It's just not a lot compared to like what I hear in speaker meetings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. If you were to like Google, like what's a normal drinking or what's, you know, alcohol abuse, whatever. It's so low.
Yeah, I mean, it's like whoever they're surveying, that assumes that they would answer those questions honestly. Answered that question honestly.
There's like a box, like 1 to 7 per week. Like, what are you talking about?
I used to be so offended by that. I was like, I'm a feminist and I will drink as much as the men are drinking. So.
Oh, good point. Exactly. See? Political yeah. Action. Yeah. Yeah.
One drink a night. You're fucking,
we can do it.
That's misogyny.
Yeah.
And I think even to that point, Jane, it's like, you know, even if somebody says, am I drinking too much, you know, and they say this number, it's like, but then the question is like, well, can you stop if you want to? You know what I mean? Like, maybe you're just a hard drinker, you know, like can you stop for 30 days and be comfortable? And then if you are, well, maybe you're just a hard drinker, you know, because there's people I've seen that are like, I'm like, oh, they're definitely an alcoholic, you know, and then they can just stop and their life gets better, you know, which is like puzzling to me. They might drink more than I do. You know what I mean?
But that and be comfortable. Can you stay sober and be comfortable?
Right.
Is such an important qualifier.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I think the way I talk people through that, I did work with somebody once briefly who, she told me she was having one glass of wine a night, and I was like, "How do you feel after you drink that one glass of wine a night?" Right. Anytime somebody mentions a quantity, I'm like, how much, how do you feel after you drink that much? Or like, have you ever had to have like two or three and then stop? How do you feel afterwards?
Yeah.
And that's how I talk about the phenomenon of craving. And then I'm like, have you tried to quit drinking before? What happened? How did you feel? You're at 30 days. How do you feel now? You know, do you feel like you're going to do it again? Yeah.
Good point. What other girl topics do we have?
Lady girl alcoholism.
Topic. Yeah.
That one. What about, and again, this isn't exclusive to women, but women seem to struggle with this a lot, this tendency towards people pleasing that a lot of us have, in and how confusing it can be to hear this stuff about like ego on pages like 63 and 64. To me, that was really confusing. I was like, I'm already a doormat. You're telling me to be an even bigger doormat? Like, that's what this program is? I don't think I can do this. But I think that was very much a misunderstanding of like what that passage is about.
Yeah.
You know? Well, did you hear, you know, I mean, I heard a lot, you never say no, you know what I mean? Like, never say no in AA. And like, I've had sponsor, like my last sponsor, she would say like, that's sick. You know what I mean? Like, you can say no, you know what I mean? It's okay. Because I was very much that, like, well, it's selfish of me if I don't say yes to absolutely every, I mean, Sylvia knows, I'd be like, I'm on my way to a meeting and I have to pick up five girls and they're all across town. And she's like, you have to, you know? And I'm like, well, you can't say no. You know what I mean?
Yes, you can.
So yeah.
Yeah. I was offended when I had a sponsor who explained to me that people pleasing was a defect. And I was like, no, it's not. I was very argumentative about it. Like, obviously it's not, I am pleasing people. No, they're not. I was approval seeking and seen through that lens. It's like, oh shit. Yeah, I am. And, but we're not doormats either. Like, wasn't that like such a, an astounding revelation to realize like, oh, I am standing up for myself, but there's also like stuff that I don't have to fight about anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not a doormat, but I'm not like, you know, getting up on a soapbox either about things that I thought that like were so important. And it was really just my own plans and designs that really aren't as important anymore.
Yeah. It was a revelation to me when I realized that a lot of my people pleasing behavior was dishonest. I really didn't want to do that. I didn't really agree with that person. So in effect, I was lying when I said like, yes, I'll do that. Or like, no, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Like, that's dishonest. And there was, I thought I was a very honest person coming into AA. I was like, I am honest to a fault. I am too honest. That's why people don't like me. And then it was just like dishonesty all down my fourth column. And it was not behavior specifically. I was like, oh shit.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the selfishness and self-seeking too. I mean, like seeking approval for other people, like I'm selfish because I want to control their perception of me. You know, this is about control. It is about like, how do I look? What am I getting from this? It can be very transactional. But the bottom line is that self-obsession, like that fear that people won't like me, that I'm not enough. Like I need validation from all of these people. I need to constantly say yes and never say no. I mean, how impossible is that? If you even just take a step back and like, if I were to tell you that my goal is to please everyone all the time, it's what, you know, people have like conflicting ideas, like choices have to be made, you know?
And, you know, in my people pleasing, I decided how exactly these people were going to be pleased. Like, it wasn't really about their pleasure or like them actually being happy. You know, it was more of them approving of me. Really didn't give a shit how they felt.
Yeah. I expect you to respond a certain way to my kindness, you know, and if you don't meet my expectations, now I resent you.
Yeah.
Or I give you advice and you don't take my advice because it's shitty advice. You go on living your life. Well, guess what? Now I have a resentment.
Oh, I got to find it. Yeah, here we go. Okay. So I read this today. This is from Language of the Heart. Oh shit. Sorry. Okay. Someone else talk. Cause I need to find the spot where I want to read. I'm trying to find the spot in this passage.
It's controlling behavior, right? When you people please, and it's about preserving other people's view of you as a specific kind of person, which is ego and self. And I think, you know, page 63, 64 made a lot more sense to me. When I stopped thinking of ego as like narcissism and started thinking of it as me trying to preserve an image of like the person that I want to think that I am or that I want other people to think that I am. Then it
worked
for me. I was like, oh, yeah, I do that all the time.
Well, and if third those stuff.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's third step stuff, just like Yen were saying, you know.
Oh, totally. Check this out. If those people would only treat me right, I wouldn't have to behave the way I do.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So good. This is just something that Wilma W. We're giving him a female name just for this episode. Wrote in Language of the Heart, but like it's a really good reading because he really like calls himself out on that people pleasing. You know, the playing God, all that shit.
That line sounds like something I've seen embroidered on a pillow, you know, at like my mom's house or something. Yeah. Or like a magnet on the fridge with like a goofy cartoon.
Bless this mess. Yeah. Right. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I mean, so the good. Male sponsors is, I don't know if this applies to just women, but do the male sponsors tell their male sponsees not to date for a year too? Or is that just us being told that?
Oh.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Who It'd would be like,
bro, just spank it for a year, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's just, I can't. Yeah, that seems like a lady thing.
I feel like it's a lady thing. Yeah.
I mean, no one ever told me not to date anyone for a year, but if they had, I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind, you know? I was so like broken and haggard and like, no, you know, I had no self-esteem or it was just like, what a crazy thing.
You're like, yeah, I'm all set. Wasn't even thinking about that.
It's right. Fine.
Talking earlier about 13th stepping, and I was thinking about how, you know, I got, apart from 13th stepping, is like how sometimes you'll get flirtatious attention from men who are like kind of on your level, which in my opinion is not 13th stepping. It was like we were both the chronic relapsers. We both had 10 days. And he was just being sort of mildly flirtatious towards me. But I remember just thinking like, the thought of touching anyone right now is just so unappealing to me. Mm-hmm. Like, how could you even be thinking about that right now? Like,
can you imagine?
I want to look at myself right now.
Yeah, sober sex at 10 days with like someone you just met. Oh, nightmare. No.
Yeah, not here. For
new
that.
Fear unlocked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good thing there's no fear inventory in the book.
Well, that's not in a women's way through the steps, so we don't have to do that one.
Yeah. Can you imagine if there was a man's way through the steps? How offensive that would be. Although if I were to bring that up, someone who was a proponent of the women's way would be like, oh, the big book already exists. That's the man's way. But like, ew, I don't know. But I say that without having read the women's way through the steps, so
And I have experienced women say, like, I can't relate to the big book because, which is crazy. It's ridiculous to think, like, well, it says he and, you know, him and myth, you know. I have experienced that, like, people saying that. And it's, I mean, it's like, well, the context of the book and the directions in it don't matter, you know, as it relates to you being a woman or, you know.
Yeah, it's spiritual principles, which are timeless and genderless.
Yeah, I think the deeper, like, root of that is really a person still trying to qualify or disqualify themselves. This can't apply to me. This won't work for me. I'm not like these people, you know? And so it's like, you kind of have to, like, let them do that. But I don't even take any of that seriously. No. It's like, do these symptoms apply to you?
Are you dying? Yeah. Like you said, it's like, are you dying? Yeah. Then, you know, it's kind of like, it don't matter what it says.
Or they're given an impression of the big book, like Jane was speaking of from her anti-AA research. You know, like,
any excuse not to go. Any excuse.
Yeah. I mean, I once got to meet with a sponsee, and it was like the first time we met. I mean, we met at a meeting and then, you know, arranged to meet via Zoom, you know, talked about sponsorship, and she shows up with that book, A Woman's Way Through the 12 Steps. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, that's not how I'm going to do it. The big book. And she's like, oh, okay, never mind. Like, it was actually really, it was a very refreshing, honest conversation. Like, oh, that, you know, cause she was like, okay, cool. I'll find someone else. Okay. Bye. Mm. Yeah. You know, I mean, I can't have anything against it other than, people think it's AA when it's not. And it gives the impression that lady alcoholism is different.
Yeah.
But if it helps just one person, sorry.
People bringing, like, random, like, some weird packet they found on, like, Google or, you know, and saying, I'm going to do it this way, and never having, like, any intolerance about that, but just like, oh, I'm not familiar with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I
don't know.
And they're usually like, okay, you know, like you said, do something else or move on or, well, what are you going to do? You know, but yeah, that's definitely a thing too.
Or that made me think of when you sit down and go through the directions for the fourth step and they're like, yeah, got it. And the next time you see them, they're like, I went on Google and I printed this 60 page and I did all this different time. Format. And it's like, what?
Why did you? Why? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You just send writing Jesus Christ gif.
I just write in big pen, do over.
Yeah.
See me after class.
Throw it away.
Yeah. Oh man. Listeners, we just started braiding each other's hair. That's why there was a pause in the conversation.
What else? I mean, I feel like it's like, you know, like Mrs. Jones said, it's not like what we experience in AA as a woman is not, it's not different. Like, we don't have different alcoholism. It's not different. I guess, like, the things in sponsorship can be, like, unique. I know, like, the fifth steps, and this isn't like a blanket statement of truth, but like the fifth steps that I've done with, like, men have been very much like not emotional, you know, which it's not always, that's not like, some guys might have a huge experience, but it's very much like not very, and like that women can get more emotional during, not all. So I guess that's like not a good example, but that can be a thing sometimes, you know, in my experience.
Boys don't cry.
Right. Exactly.
Well, here's something that is unique to women, and that is pregnancy, childbirth. Look it up. I'm not a mom, but I have, you know, kind of probed that with, you know, a prospect who's a young mom, for example, if, you know, to help them see that no human power could have relieved their alcoholism, you know, cause that's a real gut punch right there. And, you know, to help the, I mean, I've met so many people who are so sure that they're an alcoholic, you know, like, let's move on from step one, but they don't really understand what it means to be an alcoholic. They're ready to admit it, but it's like, oh, you know, they don't understand that alcoholic mind part, the beyond human aid part, and bringing that up can really cut through the delusion.
What do you mean about pregnancy?
I've known women who drank through their pregnancies, absolutely sure that they wouldn't, you know, you know, so that's what I mean. Like it's a life situation where that, can shine a light on someone's alcoholism where like, yeah, they would think that like, obviously I won't drink when I'm pregnant, or I won't drink when I'm nursing, or I won't drive drunk with the kids in the car, or this baby will save me.
Right.
You know, all the things.
But like we were saying earlier, that's that denial. I'll stop when I want to, or I would never let it get this bad, you know, and you don't realize it is that bad until you're over that line.
Right. Right.
I think that's a great, I didn't even think of that, Mrs. Jones. I was like a few months ago, I was taking a meeting into the jail, and a lot of those women lost their kids. You know what I mean? Same thing, were drinking and doing drugs while they were pregnant. And that wasn't my experience because I had my son when I was sober, but I shared with them, like, I'm 100% certain that if I was pregnant with my son, that I absolutely would drink and use drugs. Like that, that would not be powerful enough for me to stop, you know? So I love that so much because I think a lot of times they think like, I'm a piece of shit. I don't care about, you know, and it's like you said, it's like, it's no human power. Like love, if love was enough, then I mean, you love your kids, but it's not enough, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. World convictions galore, but can't live up to them.
I had a definite like bottom moment, quote unquote, when like I had to like bring my kid to an AA meeting, like, you know, cause I was like a single mom and I wasn't getting any help and I didn't have anybody nearby to like babysit. I didn't have the money for a babysitter. And I was being told, go to a meeting every day for 90 days. I was like, there's no way I can do that. Like physically that's impossible, but I'll come to as many as I can. So I had this moment where I was like, shit, I'm like the mom with like the kid in the AA meeting. And like, he was two. So he was like raising hell and nobody could hear each other. And that was definitely like a waking up moment for me. I was like, yeah, it is. It is this serious. Like, here I am. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've met so many women who would absolutely die for their kids. They're not bad moms, but they could not live up to what they wanted to be. You know, they couldn't, no human power means no human power. And I always say that, like, although I don't have firsthand experience with it, I would imagine that the love a mother has for her child has got to be the strongest form of human power there is. And if that would do it, then there wouldn't be any moms in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Well,
you know, it's good that it can be a wake up call, not in a shame way, you know, like, oh, you're the biggest piece of shit. Cause it's so common. It's so common. Lots of moms. Yeah.
Most painful thing about that moment was thinking about like remembering like the expectations I had when I was pregnant of the kind of mom that I would be and being like, this is so not that. This is just so, this is universes away from like the mother I'd pictured myself being, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I think too, something else that, you know, could be specific to women and just something I've experienced in the last few years is like, you know, going through trying to do, and Jane, you might relate to this. I know we've talked about things like this before of like trying to do some sort of a step 11 practice with a 3-year-old, you know what I mean? Like with a toddler who gets up and wants French toast as soon as he wakes up, you know what I mean? Like figuring out how to, still make a connection with God every day. And there's like a circuit speaker who talks about that. Layla, she's like for CA, and she talks about like finding balance in that of like having a small child and continuing in the latter steps of like what a sponsorship look like when, I mean, you know, when you have a small child and stuff like that, you know?
That's cool. I'd love it if you could share that with me, because there's probably a lot of that I could relate to. I think now that my son is a little bit older, I have a good 30 minutes in between me waking up and him waking up where I can, like, you know, have a quiet moment. But yeah, when he was younger, it was like most mornings, my eyes opened at 4:30 in the morning and I was hitting the ground running. And it was like, I would just have to snatch like 3 minutes here, 5 minutes there. Actually, I found that doing 11 throughout the day during those days was better. It was just like anytime I felt myself getting stressed or overwhelmed, sometimes I would actually like lay down on the kitchen floor and like that would be my like pause. But just like having that contact with the ground really helped. But yeah, I mean, and then I would do like a more involved 11 at night to kind of like balance it out. So that was kind of how I dealt with that issue.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like Mrs. Jones, how do you do step 11 in the morning when Becky's crying for temptation treats? You know what I mean?
Like it's really hard. Yeah. I mean, she's like standing on my chest, just yelling at me. So yeah, I mean, there's literally no way to bring God in, but that's okay. 'Cause she's God with fur on.
Yeah.
Your higher power is your cat. Nothing can go wrong there.
Absolutely nothing. Actually, true story, when I pray at night, because I do pray on my knees, she will come to the edge of the bed and be like, yes, because like, she thinks I'm talking to her.
Aww. That's sweet.
Yeah.
Cats can't resist it when you like lay down and get quiet. They're like, ooh, snuck time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of being a mom in AA, I've been like silent for 10 minutes at a time here and there because my kid has a cold and he keeps waking up and then coming to find me. But the point of this is that every time I like lie down next to him, my cat is like used to me lying down next to him to like put him to bed this time of night. So she's very confused now. Every time I lie down next to him to put him back to sleep, she's like, oh, okay. And now it's time for us to snuggle.
Yeah.
And I'm getting up and she's like, but, no.
Wait.
Us.
What about us? Selfish and self-centered.
Oh, man. I don't think cats can do the steps.
Never.
Sorry, cats.
Yeah.
To die of alcoholism.
Sadly. True.
Do we have a 12-question list? I mean, we probably could pop off and do that.
Pop off.
Pop off.
Pop off. Do they have to be, like, unique lady questions?
They don't have to be. I mean,
okay.
Fuck, marry, kill. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, first question. Have you ever knitted in a meeting?
No.
Does crocheting count?
Yes.
No, I've never done that either.
No, I'm an avid knitter. And I had a therapist when I started AA, and she told me to bring my knitting to an AA meeting. And I had not found this podcast yet. I did not know that that was a thing, but I was like so horrified because I was going to meetings.
You can't be doing that there.
People were like crying during their shares, and I was like, and
you're making a clack, clickety clack.
Sitting there like fucking Madame Dufarge or whatever.
I love it.
You can miss me with that.
I love it. Our next question. If you could change a line in the big book, what would it be?
What? I didn't study for this one.
Well, I think the word and how it works when it says rarely have we seen a person fail, like maybe it probably could say never or almost never.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would take out the bit in Bill's story where he says there was no real infidelity because I couldn't get it up. Fuck you, Bill. That's a lie.
Wow.
You
seriously?
Asshole.
Yeah.
You're taking out the whole bit.
Lois, I swear to God, if I were her, I would have thrown his shit out on the lawn like halfway through that story. I would have been like, no, get out.
Your limp dick out of here. Yeah.
I would change, it's a word, it's on 44, when it's talking about the two symptoms, it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. I think or is fine, but I've heard a lot of confusion about it, and I don't know anyone that has one that doesn't have the other, so I would change or to and.
Perfect.
Yeah, I want clarity on that.
I like that.
Okay. Yeah. My take on it that I stole from somebody else's take on it is the or means probably, and if you are an and, then you're definitely an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that.
My theory is also that you're on page 44 of the book, and you may not be convinced yet, right? Like, there's plenty more to read to get to that point. And so I feel like it's just giving a little leeway.
Mm-hmm.
There's still time to join us.
Awesome. Yeah.
So one of my 12
something
questions.
Something else, too.
Sorry, go ahead.
Something else I think we could pop out of here, because I don't know what the hell it means, is the steel girder thing, like prosaic steel girder.
Oh,
I think we
right.
That out, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Because then people have started asking me, what's that mean? I'm like, I have no idea. Let's just go to the next paragraph. You know, I'm not even act like I know.
Cross that out. You can cross that out in your book.
Yeah, that whole page like turned my brain into a pretzel. I'm like, why are we talking about longshoremen and going to outer space? Like, what happened?
Yeah, yeah. That's
they're
man
just trying
stuff.
To confuse you, so you'll say, fuck it. Just
it's man
confused.
Stuff.
Okay, you guys want one more question?
One more. Let's pop off.
Okay. Good. Daily reprieve from what?
The hopeless condition of mind and body. From alcoholism.
I'm going to say the mental blank spot. Twisted thinking.
What Busty said sounded right. Oh, girl. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to understand this question.
What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, yeah.
But daily reprieve from?
From?
An unspiritual condition. No, I would say, yeah. What do you think, Mrs. Jones?
I think it's from self, from self-centeredness. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like I'm not going to wake up tomorrow with, you know, suddenly an insane thought to drink if I forget to pray.
Yeah.
But every day is a day that I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, honestly, that's one line that I would kind of want to take out or change, because it's used so much to try to sound like, you know, it's only 24 hours without a drink and we're barely hanging on until tomorrow.
Right.
Like, we only have a daily reprieve, but it really says what we really have. It doesn't say only. And then same page says we get to go further or must go further.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
There's something I have a question about. And I'm not.
Is it a lady question?
No, I think it's just general. It's something that I always wondered. And if we could play Da Vinci Code with the big book just for a minute, you know. So on 55, like, I always was like, what does this mean? When it says,
I know where she's going.
In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So, like, what do they mean by that? The last analysis, you know, like the last analysis of what? Is that what you were thinking, Mrs. Jones?
No, I was thinking actually of a different page. But I think last analysis means like we're no longer analyzing. Like, this is the last time we need to analyze this, because we have found the great reality deep down within us. Like, stop trying to figure it out. He's there.
Hmm.
I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a turn of phrase. Like, at the end of the day, when all is said and done, to sum it up.
So I would take that out too, then, to answer the question a third time.
Yeah, yeah. We can trim this shit up. Like,
yeah. For real. Yeah. Let's take some live calls right now, ladies. Let's open up the phone lines.
Actually, a friend and I were riffing earlier today about like how young people would retell Bill's story, and like you guys, like literally there was quicksand, like literally all around me, like all directions, like literally.
Fifth edition,
we can hope.
Yep, exactly. It's in the works. Good job, girls.
Girl power.
Thanks, Mom.
Babes.
And it has been good for me.
And for me, this has been good. I can't wait to hear what a song John Barleycorn edits in here.
Right now. Like at this part.
I'm marking it at the end.
Shania Twain. Let's go, girls. We should start the episode with that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
We're
going to have to tell them.
Are we done?
I think we're done. Do we need to say something else to go out, though? Or was that good?
Thanks for listening. All right. John Barleycorn, we just gave you a project. Ladies.
He's going to have to edit the shit out of this.
Sorry, Myrtle.
For listening.